This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, August 5th, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, what a fun night in L.A. last night. Max Scherzer's Dodger debut.
Oh, yeah, that was great. And against the Astros, the crowd was frothing. I mean, a lot of fun to be had there. And it sounds like he had a nice time on the mound as well. So glad he's enjoying his new home.
He was dealing.
And the 1-2. Swing and a miss. 10 strikeouts. Max Scherzer in his Dodgers debut. With a brisk walk back to the third base dugout. Side retired.
And after he got back to the dugout, Clayton Kershaw was pushing him out. Go out, take your curtain call. Max Scherzer enjoyed the heck out of that. He spoke about that after the game.
With everything on the line, the way the crowd was, that was a high adrenaline start. Coming in here, try not to do too much. Just pitch my game, go out there and do what I can do, and just try to navigate the lineup. And then, the offense tonight went off. We got early runs. Gave me some breathing room, way to be able to operate, be able to attack their hitters a little bit better. Fortunately, I only had one walk. That's always a good sign. And just be aggressive at the zone and try to just sequence with them and work with Will as best I can.
The Dodgers, before this game, added four-time All-Star Cole Hamels to an incentive-laden deal. He gets $1 million guaranteed. Any start he makes, he's going to get an extra $200,000. I really feel like this is a lottery ticket. We're going to be talking about this with Sarah Langs coming up. The Los Angeles Angels announced that third baseman Anthony Rendon is going to have season-ending surgery. After that announcement, Shohei Ohtani, who's been the show for the Angels all year, went out and he dealt.
Got him. Six strikeouts for Ohtani tonight. A Ryan-esque performance by Ohtani in the Lone Star State tonight.
Yeah, he was great. Six innings, six strikeouts, and just one run allowed. That, of course, the voice of Matt Viskirchian on the Angels television broadcast. The Angels win that game 2-1. Brewers reliever John Axford made one appearance, and now he's out due to significant elbow damage. The Yankees came back from an early deficit on Wednesday to crush the Orioles. Anthony Rizzo did it again.
That one is driven out to right center field. He straightened this one out. See ya! A home run for Rizzo. Yankees have their first hit. Yankees have their first run. It's 3-1-0s.
And the Yankees' final score there was 10-3. What a show Javier Baez put on. First for the Mets with a slide.
And Nito hammers one on the ground. Aguilar coming home with it for the tag play. And Baez is safe. Looked like it got there in time. But the home plate umpire Angel Hernandez said Baez got in around the tag by Jackson to make it 2-0 New York. And we'll see if the Marlins challenge.
Wow, maybe some trickery with that slide by Baez.
Give him the old okey-doke?
Yeah, a little okey-doke to maybe get that hand in before Jackson could apply the tag.
Gary Cohn, Ron Darling on SNY. And Baez got it done at the plate.
Baez hits one in the air, deep to right. Back for it goes De La Cruz. It's gone! Home run, Javier Baez! To the opposite field. Baez gives the Mets the lead. It is 4-3 in the top of the eighth. And boy, do the Mets need that.
That from WCBS. A's, Padres, Oakland was down 3-2, bottom of the ninth inning, and this happened.
Look back at second, the pitch. Swung on, lined up the middle, it's a base hit. Here comes Kemp, he's around third. He scores the tying run. Yan Gomes delivers a two-out, two-strike RBI, and we start all over. The A's 3, the Padres 3, as baseball's best closer is delivered a punch to the gut, courtesy of Yan Gomes.
That from A's cast. The Padres took a 4-3 lead in the top of the 10th inning, and then in the bottom of the 10th, more drama.
Runners in the corners, nobody out. The pitch, Marte running, and Olson a fly ball. Right field, going back. Myers at the warning track, and it's off the wall. Here comes Cannon. Marte hustling, being waved home. The throw to the play, way off line of the A's at warning.
Boy, what excitement there in the ballpark in Oakland. That was pretty cool. Oakland wins 5-4. Meanwhile, the team that is chasing the San Diego Padres in the National League wildcard race, the Cincinnati Reds, they were playing the Twins, and they got the job done.
Rip high, deep, left center field. You kiss that baby goodbye. 6-1 Reds as Tyler Stevenson hits his sixth home run of the year, and he got every bit of it.
That was the Cowboy, Jeff Brantley, 700 WLW. Reds win 6-5. They're now four games behind the Padres in the wildcard race. Today we'll be talking with Cincinnati General Manager Nick Kroll about that. Before we get to Sarah, to Jesse, to Nick, listen to my friend Mike Greenberg, host of Greeny on ESPN Radio. Greeny is keeping you up to date on NFL training camps and the latest Aaron Rodgers news. It seems like every day there's some Aaron Rodgers news. That's Greeny on ESPN Radio weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, or listen to the podcast of the show wherever you get your podcast. 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores Moore's decision to step away from the sport to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Stream it now on ESPN Plus. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, Buster?
I'm doing great because I got to watch Max Scherzer get excited on the mound at Dodger Stadium yesterday. I did a radio hit this morning, Sarah, KJZ, and I mentioned, you know, Max Scherzer is, in terms of his understanding of his craft and his technical acumen, like, he's off the charts. But then a really great thing about Max is there's this other half of him. It's kind of like his eyes, right? He's got two sides of two different colors. He's got that technical side, and then he has the emotional side, and the way that he ramps up, and you could just see the adrenaline dripping off of him last night.
Oh my gosh. I mean, when we realized that that first start was going to come in this supercharged series between the Dodgers and Astros, you just knew that it was going to be on another level because he was going to feed off the crowd and everything else, even though he has no dog in that particular fight that the fans are still fighting from a couple of years ago. He beat this team in the World Series, if anything, but I just knew that he was going to be feeding off of all of that. And you saw that absolutely. I mean, he just looked like vintage Max Scherzer. You know that the Dodgers did the right thing getting him, and we already knew that. I mean, he's shown no signs of slowing down. He's having one of his best seasons in the last few years, and it was just so exciting to watch that. And I know I had a lot of people tweeting at me this question. You probably did too. The last time a pitcher took a curtain call in a game like that, and I have absolutely no idea, but I love that the crowd was so into it to merit that.
Yeah, and he said after the game that he'd never had that situation before, and I thought about that. It kind of, you know, struck me because here's a future Hall of Famer who's been around a long time. But then you don't have situations where starting pitchers are given that moment when they come out, you know, unless they throw a no-hitter. If you throw a no-hitter, maybe even a complete game, you know, you can give that one final wave to the crowd. But you're not going to have that if you're taken out in the middle of the game. And
definitely.
So that,
and his no-hitters were both on the road, right? I'm thinking, I know that one was because I was sitting there at Citi Field, and I'm pretty sure that the other one was too. And if you go back to the World Series, they lost all the home games. That was the first World Series where the home team lost every single game. So he didn't get that moment even with the Nationals fans.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, he didn't have a dog in the hunt when it comes to the Astros Dodgers stuff from 2017. I would say this. I've heard that during the 2019 World Series, the Nationals were extra, extra, extra careful in facing the Astros in the World Series because they had heard the stories. And this was before, you know, the Athletic story broke and all the sign stealing scandal. But the Nationals were extra, extra careful. And Max, you know, certainly would have been well aware of that. Before that game, we got word that they agreed to terms with Cole Hamels. I feel like that this was like the Dodgers buying a lottery ticket while knowing two of the six numbers, so to speak, because they watched him work out. They saw that he throws 88 to 90 miles per hour in that workout. His best pitch is his changeup when he's going right. And they're a team that's well over the luxury tax. So giving him $1 million and $200,000 per start, not a big deal. And you could easily see him pitching meaningful innings in October. What do you think?
You totally could. I mean, my first thought when I saw it was just, you know, what are they seeing? They must be seeing something. And we certainly have to trust their player evaluation. We know that they're very good at that. But, you know, he threw 3 1/3 innings last year. He threw more than that, about 140 in 2019. He was pretty good back in 2019. I mean, that felt like the end of his career in a lot of ways. He had a 3.81 ERA. His FIP, some of the underlying numbers said maybe it should have been a little bit higher, but 3.81 ERA down the stretch is certainly something that I think the Dodgers would take. And I was curious your take on this, but I just saw this as a, you know, Clayton Kershaw insurance policy, just in case, with us not exactly sure when he might be returning. Obviously, you're not replacing still close to vintage Clayton Kershaw with an older Cole Hamels, but that was my first thought, was just thinking that they might need some of those innings given the recent developments with Kershaw.
And Max Scherzer, too, right? He had that tricep issue. He's had other physical issues. And at his age, you know, father time is beginning to manifest. And at his age, who knows exactly, you know, how Max will hold up as we go down the stretch and if they have any other unexpected injuries. It feels like every year when we talk about a team having too much starting pitching, as Joe Torre once said, when the Yankees one spring had like 8 starters for 5 spots, he kind of grinned, I remember, and said, These things have a way of working themselves out. And it might be, you know, with the signing of Cole Hamels, that these things might have a way of working themselves out, and it'll turn out to be a smart signing for the Dodgers. I know how much you love watching Shohei Ohtani play. So when I heard this information yesterday, I thought you'd get a kick out of it. You know, people have sort of wondered, you know, how the Angels are going to handle Ohtani down the stretch, having this amazing MVP caliber season in what looks to be probably a lost season. The Angels are a long shot to make the postseason. They announced yesterday Anthony Rendon is going to miss the rest of the year after having surgery. We don't know when Mike Trout's coming back. From what I understand from my conversations yesterday, the Angels' attitude about Ohtani is, you know what, we're going to let him do what he wants going forward. There's not going to be a situation where they're going to suddenly pull back on his innings as a pitcher or rest him more and start to ramp it, prepare for 2022. Their intention is, you know what? You want to go for it. You want to go for MVP. You want to keep having this historic season. We're going to let you do that. And Sarah, it feels like that's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, I know winning the World Series is the ultimate goal. We know all of those things about baseball, but there has been nothing that has added more fans to this game this year than Shohei Ohtani, the myth of Shohei Ohtani, the celebrity of Shohei Ohtani, and the play of Shohei Ohtani. So the more of that that we can get and them not, you know, going overboard or to any extent to try to protect him is hopefully good for him and really, really good for the game. So I love to hear that. And I do have to say that I think we really owe a thanks to the Angels and the way they've handled this the entire season. I mean, we've seen him be allowed to let loose a little bit more, right? I mean, before before this season, he wasn't hitting in the games he was pitching. I know he hasn't hit that well in the games he's pitched lately, but he did have that game on Sunday Night Baseball that you guys had, the first one of the year, right? With the 451-foot home run in the first inning when he also threw 100 miles an hour, which is still my favorite moment of the year, other than probably the home run derby. And, you know, the fact that we've gotten those moments is because the Angels have allowed him to be himself so far this year. So that's really encouraging to hear. And again, I mean, Shohei Ohtani is just on another level, I think, in terms of figures in this game right now. So the more that he can be allowed to do is absolutely the better.
We got about 3 minutes left. I got two more for you. Joe Wilkins at August West 27 asked, why does it feel like the world stopped caring about sticky stuff? I see umps checking hats and gloves, but also see pitchers routinely reach into their pockets and shirt sleeves. Some of the spin rates are coming back up as well. When I got that tweet, I reached out to you this morning, Sarah, to ask you about, you know, that data about spin rates. What do you see?
So first of all, I think that the main reason that people might think that the world stopped caring or whatever else it might be, it feels like TV broadcasts are showing it less. So I do want to point that out. I mean, I watch a lot of games, and that first week, every single pitcher we saw when he was coming off the mound, it was an event that we would see it before they went to break. Feels like they've gone away from that a little bit, probably to get their commercials in or whatever else. But it does feel like that could be part of it. I looked at the numbers, and you know, if you look with that June 21st enforcement date, there's definitely a difference if we look at force seamer and breaking pitches, average spin rate from that beginning portion of the season and then since then. But if we split up that June 21st onward and we pause at the All-Star break, there's just not much of a difference. I mean, when we talk about spin rates, and you know, this can be for anybody who is looking at this stuff, which is all on Baseball Savant, we really want a difference of about 100 RPM or more to be statistically significant. And that first portion, there's definitely something that's close to it. But since then, not really that much. And I really think that a lot of this and a lot of these league average rates are also affected by the fact that there are a lot of guys who are just league average to begin with, whether a previous league average or a current one, whatever you want to say. When you're looking at every single pitch thrown in the majors on a given day or in a 3 week span, it just kind of makes the data a little bit more noisy there, that there aren't going to be those big spikes that I think people are looking for.
And last one, we're going to be talking to Nick Kroll, the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds, in a moment. What do you see in the Reds as they chase the Padres?
They are such a fascinating team. I mean, we talked about them on Tuesday, and I was saying, you know, if they could just win every game 15-14, I think that they would be okay, and I could see them as a really fun wildcard team. But they have a zero run differential right now, which sounds exactly right to me, because their pitching has not been good, especially their relief pitching. But we know that that offense is really good, and they play in a really offensive-friendly park, which helps them a lot, too. I'm looking at their roster, and TJ Antone and Lucas Sims are due back soon. So I think that that's really encouraging for them, for their bullpen, which has struggled, 21st in reliever ERA. But the thing that stands out most to me on their roster is someone who's not up there yet. And I'm not sure if you got a chance to talk about him at all, but Jose Barrero, who's their fourth ranked prospect, according to MLB.com, he's a shortstop. He's hitting .319 in AAA, slugging .593 in 30 games. He was also good in AA before he got promoted. The Reds have, for all of their good offense, a 77 weighted runs created plus from shortstops, which there's only four teams worse than that. Again, 100 is league average. So we're talking below league average from shortstop for them, basically from Kyle Farmer. So, I mean, I wonder if that's a player who could impact them down the stretch in any way, because it certainly seems like it's a player who could help them.
I will ask Nick about him, Sarah.
Awesome.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
and what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Nick Wallace, the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds. And Nick, I've heard so many stories from a lot of your peers about that trade deadline last week. What was that like for you, all the craziness?
Well, you know, we knew we wanted to add some relievers. That was our first and foremost goal. And we ended up doing that at the beginning of the week. So we actually had got our deals done on, I guess, Tuesday and into Wednesday. So the last couple of days were a little bit, I don't want to say relaxed, because that it definitely was not that. But, I think we had a lot of phone calls, a lot of things we could have done, and we just weren't prepared to do them for based on prospects or finances or whatever. So
what was it like to, the fan inside of you, to see all the deals and the sort of the rapid fire stuff on Thursday and Friday?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it's, for somebody who loves to watch baseball and just, is a baseball fan, it's fun to see. It's fun to see, and then from a working perspective, you're saying, okay, well, who did my competitors get? And is there anybody else out there we can get, and how can we approach this? And, it was a lot of fun going down that road.
What's your theory as to why it played out that way? Were you, because we certainly have had those years where we get the trade down the deadline and we're all like, boy, that was boring. There wasn't a lot of stuff. Not in this case. We're all catching our breath trying to process all of it.
Well, I think, there were some clubs that were clearly selling, and then some that were clearly buying. And I think with the absence of deals and people waiting to see what happens until they got closer to the deadline, I think that, you didn't have the deals 2 weeks prior. You didn't have the little deal here, the little deal there. I think, you had just a handful. And I think that's probably what led to more deals at the end than normal.
All right. For you guys, since the beginning of spring training, one of the questions is, how do you handle shortstop? Where do you sit now that we're past the deadline in terms of how you foresee that playing out?
Well, I mean, we started with Eugenio Suarez there out of camp. Obviously, a move or an injury to Mike Moustakas pushed him back to third and put Kyle Farmer in. Kyle Farmer's been tremendous for us. He's really done a great job both offensively and defensively, making strides forward this year. And he's really been a leader on this club, and it's been great to have. We also have Jose Barrero, who's one of our best prospects. He's in AAA. He's not quite ready for the big leagues yet, but at the same time, he's getting close. And we feel that we're moving in the right direction in that position.
I was just going to ask, Sarah Langs was just on with us, and she mentioned Barrero. Do you see him playing some kind of a role for this team before the end of the year?
Well, I think that, it's right now we've got Castellanos coming back from injury. We've got Moustakas, who's coming back from injury. We've got Nick Senzel coming back from injury. I think those guys are going to come on our team. And I think that if you had a 40-man roster and you could just activate everybody in September, I think it's a lot easier to say yes than no. I think that he is – at some point he'll be ready to take a role. It's just how's he going to fit? Where's he going to fit? How can we best fit everybody in? And I think that's something where we've just got to look at our roster and as we get to 28 in September and see what the best fits on our roster are.
One of my favorite players to watch and talk to in baseball is Joey Votto. And he's been going through this unbelievable surge of late, which kind of is in keeping with his career. For someone who is with his approach at the plate is so consistent, he does seem to go through these periods where you can almost see him trying to figure things out. And he certainly has lately. What have you seen in him lately?
I think the biggest thing with Joey lately, he's having a lot of fun. He's having a lot of fun in the clubhouse with the guys. And I think it's really helped him relax at the plate. Our hitting coaches starting at the end of last year did a great job of getting him to be a little bit more upright, just to attack the ball. And he's really embraced it, and he's been tremendous. I mean, he's been a tremendous player for so many years. And you know, it's great to see him be a presence in the middle of our order.
I feel like the best kept secret in baseball is Jonathan India, your second baseman. Tell me what you've seen in him.
Tough kid. You know, I've been extremely impressed. He's a guy that, you know, we added at the beginning of the season. We talked about him as a guy to come up last year, but at the end of the day, he had an oblique strain that ended his season from summer camp. So we weren't able to bring him up. So coming into spring training, you know, he was somebody that was legitimately competing for a spot. He came in and he made the necessary adjustments, and we just thought it was the best player to have on our team at second base to start the season. And you know, we thought he was ready in all aspects, but the biggest thing was he was mentally ready to take the job. You knew he could suffer from a failure. He's, you know, at the beginning of the year, he was awesome the first couple of weeks, and then he struggled, but then he made the adjustment and he hasn't looked back. And he's played through injuries. He grinds at bats. I think a lot of the older guys are looking up to him. He's been a tremendous guy to have on this team. You know, he and Tyler Stevenson, both just from a rookie perspective, just really have guys have embraced them and they've taken roles just to help us win ball games. And they've been tremendous to be around.
I know whenever you do Braves game, I always ask Brian Snitker for comps with his players, and he really hates it. Like, now it's become kind of a running joke between us. But when I watch India play, I just keep on seeing Chase Utley in terms of his skill set and approach. Like this, you could see him for years and years and years being a guy who's going to get on base 380, 420, somewhere in that range. Does that make sense?
That's a great comp. Yeah, it is. And I know exactly how you feel about how he feels about the comps. You know, no one's exactly the same. Maybe they have a different body type or they play differently. Chase Utley's a great comp. You know, you watched him play with the Phillies for a long time and then the Dodgers, and he's a guy that just grinds and he wants to win. He wants to beat you in the competition that he's in, no matter what it is. And that's what Jonathan does.
Tell me about the impact of Nick Castellanos since you guys signed him and what you've seen in him around the team.
He's a great guy. You got to get to know him. He's a little bit to himself. He's not the most open guy when you get to know him. And then after you get to know him, he's tremendous to be around. I mean, he's a guy that's really embraced by everybody in our clubhouse. He is another guy that wants to win. He reminds me a similar personality to, you know, on the field to Jonathan India. He's not going to give in. He's going to do everything he can to help his team win, whether it's, you know, hit a sack fly, you know, roll over a ball to get a run in, dive for a ball, whatever that is. He wants to win just as much as anybody else. And I think that's been a great impact to have on this team. And he's been a tremendous person to be around.
All right, Nick, I'll be watching. You guys are a lot of fun to watch these days. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster. Appreciate you having me.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. And Jesse, I will see you this weekend, because not only do we have Sunday Night Baseball, Jesse, but we are on ABC. White Sox against Cubs at Wrigley Field. I'm looking forward to it.
Very exciting. I think Cub fans are starting to dump their tickets onto Sox fans after that trade deadline, Buster. So it could be a little bit of a hostile atmosphere for the home team, which is very unusual when the Cubs play the Sox.
I was going to ask you about that. You led me perfectly into that. Generally speaking, what's the response of Cubs fans to what we saw at the deadline? And I got a feel for it last night because I was on with Spain and Fitz. And you could just hear Sarah when I was explaining the logic behind the trades. She wasn't buying it.
Yeah, there's mixed reaction. I mean, good fans that follow this thing understand how it works. And good fans who love the Cubs are also upset at how this thing works. You know, the idea that you can grow a team, win a World Series, and say goodbye to all these stars that you know. But on the other hand, they were underachieving and weren't signing extensions. Maybe that's the team's fault. Maybe that's the player's fault. But the reality in front of Jed Hoyer was, I've got these guys that are going to walk. I've got to make some deals. But let's not pretend like it's not the team making the bed that they're sleeping in right now. They set their team up to have 12, 13 free agents on it. They traded Yu Darvish, which hurts them on the field. And so this was sort of, to me, inevitable, Buster, going back to January. But going back a couple of years, maybe they could have locked up KB or Baez or Rizzo, and it never happened. So I've been telling everybody, and I've been on my radio station in Chicago, there's a lot of blame to go around if you're upset that these guys left town.
Yeah, I had Kylie McDaniel on the podcast the other day, and he ran through the return for the Cubs got in the trade. Set that aside for a moment. I wrote a column the other day in which I wrote, and I'm not around the team as much as you are, don't have a feel for it as much as you do, but when I was around the team, that time absolutely fueled my feeling of, you know what, it was time to break up this group. Like it had, as I wrote in the piece, the feel of the six-year college seniors. Like, it's time to graduate and move on. And I think the play of Baez and Rizzo and Bryan has underscored that. Like, you felt like, you know what? You guys are going to enjoy your next challenge, your change of scenery. You buy that or no?
No, I do. I do. I'm with you. I'm not surprised they're having some success. They're the shiny new object in town for these new teams. I will say the difference between being shocked and sort of understanding how this was going to go could be just one player. Like if Cubs had signed just Rizzo, people would be understanding, okay, we're going to build around our guy Rizzo here. If they had just kept Baez, all right, shortstop, that's the guy you build around. But to see them all go after Schwarber had left, after, you know, go back to Ben Zobrist, Addison Russell, the whole championship team has moved on, which eventually is going to happen anyway. But I think that was kind of the shock of it all, just to see them all out the door instead of maybe building around one or two of them at the most, I guess.
So Javier Baez has a chance to impress a really rich guy in baseball over the next 2 months in Steve Cohen. And who knows, maybe at some point the Mets owner says, I love this guy. I love the idea of him and Lindor playing together. We're going to lock him up even before he becomes a free agent. If he hits the open market, Jesse, I believe the team that he most likely signs with is going to be the Cubs. What do you think?
If he gets to the open market, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not. It's just like what you just said, time to move on. If any of the three were to return, I would think it might be Rizzo. They don't have a power-hitting left-handed first baseman ready to go. He's got those leadership qualities. The contract should be a little bit easier to negotiate, you would think, although it wasn't before. I think they may have moved on from Baez. Look, Baez fits on a team that has a lot of on-base around them. Now, the Cubs are stacking some on-base guys, so a future Cubs team might make sense for Baez and his skill set. And I think that's the calculus anybody looking at Baez has to – like, he can't be a seventh guy in your lineup that swings and misses, right? You've got to have a lot of on-base around him to afford what he does. And up until this point, the Cubs have had too much swing and miss, but they are changing it with Nico Hoerner, Nick Madrigal over from the White Sox, and some guys in the minor leagues. They are changing it. I just think that door may have shut. I could be wrong, though. I'm not. It's a good relationship. Those were the people that were talking, Baez's camp and the Cubs, the most over these last few years. Like, there was dialogue, there was offers and counteroffers, and I have some confusion over that, Buster. Like, why wasn't there a dialogue? Even Rizzo's camp, certainly KB's camp, shut that down, you know, a few years ago. It seemed like they were only talking to Baez, and even that ended sort of post-pandemic. It's really strange. Of course, the Cubs did stop spending after acquiring Yu Darvish. They haven't spent money in a few years.
All right, let's talk about the first place team in this weekend's game, the Chicago White Sox. Tony La Russa has come out and said after the acquisition of Craig Kimbrel, we will not have a closer controversy. How is he going to manage that with Liam Hendricks and with Craig Kimbrel?
Well, he's going to start with this theory that we are winning a lot of games, which means we need our top relievers at the end of games, and the schedule will dictate Liam will get the ninth inning this night. The next night, it'll be Kimbrel. Now, when they're both available, as we saw the other night, he pitched Kimbrel in the eighth and Hendricks in the ninth, which kind of makes sense in that Hendricks is the guy that was there, but Kimbrel's just having such a year, it's hard to imagine him not pitching the ninth inning. They have all said the right things. I was shocked, to be honest, or surprised, that Kimbrel and Hendricks both were talking team first. Not that they're not good teammates, but you know how ninth inning guys are, Buster. They want the ball in the ninth. The adrenaline on the mound comes from closing out those games. But so far, so good. We'll see how this continues to play out. It sounds like they're both going to get their opportunities. But in the end, Tony will have to make a decision. Seventh game of the World Series, ninth inning. I'm assuming it's going to be Hendricks because he was the guy there first.
He's going to go with the hottest guy for the rest of the year. I don't think that for Kimbrel or Hendricks, there'll be any issues this year. If you told me during the wintertime that Kimbrel's camp at some point went to the White Sox and said, look, he wants to close for 2022, that would not shock me with that club option. Because I just remember when he was a free agent, and this doesn't happen very often in this analytic age. A lot of relievers don't care about saves the way that they used to. But Craig Kimbrel is a Hall of Fame candidate, and his candidacy is going to be built to some degree on saves, which is why I do think at some point, and it's not going to be during the year, I want to make clear, this is total speculation, I would not be surprised if in the offseason there is a question from Kimbrel's camp about what his role is going to be. What do you think?
Well, don't you think there's a good chance they pick up that option and then trade him? I mean, it's one thing to have two of them for 2 months and a playoff run for the whole, like you can really turn, let's say they go far in the playoffs or win the World Series, and then you flip Kimbrel for some really good talent, whether it be prospects or maybe you get a new second baseman after trading Madrigal. I can't imagine they're both on this team for 2022. Now, let me just say this. When you get to Chicago, you're going to love talking to Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams. This was one of their favorite trades in 20 plus years of doing work together. Kenny Williams told me it's the first time in 20 years working with Rick Hahn they ever hugged each other, ever. Even after the 05 World Series, it was after trading for Craig Kimbrel. So this is a commodity that's going to help them this year. And one way or another, it's going to help them next year, whether it's winning games for the Sox or getting some talent back. But they are in love with what they did accomplishing that. And to be honest, I didn't think it would happen. I did not think they would pay the high price to get Craig Kimbrel while other teams needed Kimbrel probably even more. What a trade they made.
All right, Jesse, I will see you at Wrigley.
You got it. Be well.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. We have our guy PK Steinberg at PK Steinberg. He writes in, do you see the Pirates, Brian Reynolds, getting an MVP consideration in the NL, or do you hate the Pirates too? I think you probably hate the Pirates, and the NL MVP race is a party and everyone's invited. So why not give him some love?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to be predisposed anyway because he went to Vanderbilt, right?
He's
having a great season. I do feel like it is completely wide open. If the Braves win wind up winning the National League East, I think that's going to fuel, potentially the response that Freddie Freeman gets. If the Dodgers roll with Trey Turner, I think that's going to give him an advantage. The only thing I think it's apparent at this point is that unless Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back, he's probably not going to win it. And I don't think DeGrom's going to win it now that he's missed all these starts.
All righty. Let's go to Ben at MattRat103. Ben writes in, it's possible this has already been discussed, but if it hasn't, can we officially declare the NL East this year's GOAT Rodeo? I think that is apt.
Yeah, Ben, absolutely. I'll go with that. Mm-hmm. Who knows? It is a GOAT Rodeo. It's completely unpredictable. I've been asked on radio shows, who's going to win the National League East? And I'm like, I have no idea. I'll stick with my preseason pick of the Braves, which I'm feeling a little bit better about.
All righty. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Nick, to Sarah, to Jesse, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.